The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County. Time again for the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Here are your hosts, Alan and Robin Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here for the second hour of the Outdoors and Radio Show. And our guest did call in this morning, and his name is Mike Luisi. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you feeling?
A little better.
Good.
I've got a little bit of what's going around.
Yeah. Well,
so I apologize for if I'm stuffy and sniffing a little.
Not a problem. Yeah. Not a problem at all. So just want you to feel better. Take your medication, take your meds, and get your rest. That's all. That's usually what it takes. So that's good. Mike, tell us your title within the department.
Yeah, so I work for the Department of Natural Resources, and I'm in Fishing and Boating Services, which is one of the units of the department. I run a branch that oversees management and science on tidal fisheries. So everything in tidal waters, from oysters to fish out to the ocean, and highly migratory species and all that stuff too.
So all that good stuff.
My branch oversees a large fisheries monitoring program throughout the state.
Indeed. And you are the point man for the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, the meetings and that type of thing.
Lynn Fagley is our director. She
right.
Is our actual appointee, but I serve as her proxy on the Striped Bass Board, which is and many other boards, but I know
sure.
Striped bass is something that you wanted to talk about today.
That's one of the things. Yeah, are you also the liaison to the Potomac River Fisheries Commission?
I don't do the Potomac River Fisheries Commission. Lynn does the Potomac River.
I sit as
our state representative on the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council.
Okay, got it. Well, the money fish is the striped bass here in Maryland, no question. It's the one that suffers the most management, along with the blue crab, and we might talk a little bit about that too. But
of course,
So the surveys that are conducted, the Young of the Year surveys, is what the management seems to be based on here in Maryland, and that's, good, bad, or indifferent. The numbers need to be where they need to be to make any management decision. When years are good for so many years in a row, things loosen up a little bit. When this spawning and recruitment is not as good as it should be, then other management decisions are made on a conservation level to try and conserve the sustainability of the species. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, generally,
Maryland
we get the fish first,
right?
The young fish that are here. So the juvenile index the survey that we do does not carry with it management action. It's one of a whole series of different data inputs that go into the stock assessment.
Okay,
striped bass. Now there was a stock assessment that was conducted last year, and the stock assessment is what managers react to. But with all of that said, 6 years of poor recruitment, one after another, consecutively, is a very serious cause for concern. And since those fish are ours first, since they're resident fish, those fish from 0 to 6 years old that would have been are probably still in the Chesapeake Bay, we kind of take action first. And then as those fish move out into the coastal population, they'll see the changes as reflected in the poor recruitment. Now, they'll see that in 7 or 8 years. So when we get to 2030, 2032, the coastal fishery is going to be experiencing some of the lower abundances that we have now in the Chesapeake. It's just going to take time for that to make its way all the way through that migratory that migratory pattern and the life history of the striped bass, if that makes sense.
It does. And being the estuary, being the spawning grounds, these fish see probably the most pressure on any of the Atlantic states. I'm gonna just throw that out there. You can tell me when I'm, you know, when I'm wrong or right or whatever. But you know, they're. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, please. You go ahead.
I was gonna say we start the catch and release season early. It continues on. Then, of course, you know, we had the trophy season where the focus was on the big spawning fish. Right. Then we continue through the summer with only a 2-week break, and then all the way up until December. So we're on those fish 9 months a year with all kinds of pressure.
That's correct.
I will say this, and I've said it, and I'll continue to say it from the first year the catch and release season was instituted, not in favor of it. There are many people who go out there with light tackle and fight the biggest striped bass they've ever hooked, ever caught, ever landed. I don't particularly believe that is good for the species. And I know the water's cold. We've dealt with the hooking mortality and all that type of thing, but I don't think there's ever been a study done on what happens when you catch a 40, 30, 40, 50-pound cow, pull her out of the water, when she's, you know, weeks away from spawning, hoist her a high, take a hero shot, and chuck her back in the water. She's going to swim away because the water's cold enough. But what happens to the eggs? I don't, you know, the fish may survive, but what happens to the eggs? And I don't think we know that answer.
No, we don't know that answer, and it's one of the questions that we want to be able to answer. It would take some significant funding, if someone from the university system had some ability, you know, if somebody wanted to do that study. I've been talking right now with some folks in the Northeast who are doing some radio telemetry work on striped bass, and our discussions are leading to this concept of maybe there's an opportunity to evaluate our large adult fish that are here in the bay in the spring to determine kind of what do they do after being caught. Do they swim? Do they go back to the ocean? Do they continue with their migration to spawn? You know, what really happens to those fish after they're caught? And it is a question that we still have.
Right.
And we debate, there's a lot of debate even internally about whether or not catch and release, whether or not catch and release during the spring is appropriate.
Right.
Now, my personal opinion is that I think in order to maintain some stability, not just for the species, but for the level of interest of striped bass in Chesapeake Bay, the department needs to consider when access should and shouldn't be available to those fish.
Okay.
And we have to consider the trade-off between closing it down completely, as we have in the recent few years. We've had April and May kind of shut down, basically, for any interactions with stripers. We have to consider whether or not the trade-off of savings that we get from that is enough to outweigh the amount of interest and the amount of money that's spent in the economy and in our region for people to go fishing.
Okay.
So there's a line there between conservation and providing for that ability to access the resource.
Sure.
And it's one that the managers struggle with as well.
No question.
The East Coast. Yeah.
No question. So you've had 6 years of poor recruitment, the juvenile studies, and there are so many factors on that, environmental factors, weather, predation. It's not just all on the fisherman's back that they've caught too many and that type of thing. There's so many more factors. I mean, a sudden thunderstorm, you know, sending a pulse through the population that fresh water that could just wipe them out. You've got the invasive blue catfish that are just eating everything in the bay, and I know that that's we're going to talk a little bit about that. But, you know, because there were no changes this year, is that because the wheels turned so slowly in the management world that we couldn't get those changes enacted in time for the 2025 season and we're looking at 2026?
No.
No.
Now, the wheels do turn slowly.
Right.
I will agree to that.
Okay.
The reason why we didn't take action at this time for 2025 was because based on the stock assessment, our fishing effort and the mortality that's being applied to the striped bass stock along the Atlantic coast is fine. We are in a very good and comfortable place regarding fishing mortality. And so because we're not overfishing the population, managers felt that there was no immediate need because what we are trying to do is manage fishing mortality. That is our ultimate goal. And as you know, Alan, fishing mortality is all death related to the act of fishing. So if you catch it and put it in the cooler, that's considered fishing mortality. If you catch the fish and throw it back and it eventually dies, that's considered fishing mortality. So when we're making management decisions, we're basing it on where we stand, whether it's in the Chesapeake Bay or on the Atlantic coast. What is our level of fishing mortality, and can this population sustain under the current levels of fishing mortality?
Got it.
And we're comfortable where we are right now with fishing mortality.
Okay. Even though you get a ton of complaints in the summer months with the dead discards floating all over the bay, you're still comfortable with all that. Okay.
I mean, we would like to try to address the dead discard mortality at the next chance we get to do regulations or to modify regulations in the state. The summer, in our minds, is the worst time of year for mortality that comes after the catch.
No question. So
catch and release mortality is massive in the summer. I mean, the water temperatures, especially in the last half a decade, maybe even a decade, the water temperatures get to a critical level where any more heat we could see mass die-offs.
Yeah, you know? And it's not just for fishing pressure. It also has to do with dissolved oxygen and the dead zones and all that stuff.
Yeah, and what happens is the dead zones constrict the fish. Fish need three things. They need to breathe, they need to eat, and they need water that doesn't cook them.
Right.
Right?
So exactly.
What they do is they find water where it's good for their physiology.
Right.
They find food. If they don't find food, then they just starve and they get skinny. And as long as they can breathe, they'll stay there. And so what happens, and what we've seen over the past few years, is that this constriction of the stock to a place where they can live just aids in, it almost exacerbates the release mortality.
Sure.
They're so much easier to catch when they're all lumped together.
Well, you hear it. Well, they're all south of Bloody Point, you know, or they're all in the Upper Bay or whatever it might be. So it's all because of what you're saying.
Alan, and yeah, I'm glad you said it the way you said it. The scary thing for us is when you say they're all at south of Bloody Point. If we're talking about an entire population of fish in the Chesapeake in one place, that's not good.
Exactly.
That's a bad thing. When I moved here 25 years ago, fish were everywhere. They were all over the bay.
Yep.
And those are not the conditions that we find ourselves in right now. And so while there are a lot of fish in that school, it's just not a very healthy thing when they're all in one place and they're not able to kind of branch out because it makes it harder for people to catch them.
And they eventually run out of food, and as you said, they get skinny.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Mike, I got to get you to hold there just for a second. We have to take a commercial break. We do have two callers on the line, and if you're up for taking a question, we have Lee and Tim that want to ask you a couple questions when we come back, okay?
Perfect. Yep.
Good, good, good. All right. Hey, folks, I want to tell you about Hearth America at Backyard Billy's. And we'll make this brief because this is an important guest here. And we don't want to shortchange our sponsor either. But if you are in need of a pellet stove, a pellet insert, a gas insert, a wall mount gas stove, an electric insert, a wood insert, freestanding wood or pellet stove, anything that you need to heat any place in your home, whether that's to fill a hole in the fire where the fireplace used to be, whether that's a shed or a building that you want to heat, whether that's to replace an insert in your housing, in your condo unit, well, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is the place. They carry the best brands. Robin and I are extremely satisfied, not only with the service that they provided for installing our fireplace insert, but also the follow-up service as well. So the place is called Hearth America at Backyard Billy's. BackyardBillys.com is the website. Hearth America has a Facebook page. The phone number is 410-827-4500. That's 410-827-4500. Now, look, when you go there, you're going to see acres of furniture. You're going to see poly furniture for your backyard. That's why it's called Backyard Billy's. You're going to see sheds and chicken coops and dog kennels and everything for your backyard. But it's cold now, so people want to talk about heat, and that's where Hearth America comes in. Hearth America and Backyard Billy's is open 7 days a week. Route 50, exit 44B, Evans Avenue, coming from the bridge. That's Graysonville. If it's heat you want, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is the fireplace. I want to talk a little bit about guns at Clyde Sports Shop. You know, Browning, well, let me just say this. Get ready for their Let's Go Fishing 10-day sale, March 14th through Sunday, March 23rd, with savings throughout the store and a ugly stick weightlifting contest, and we'll talk more about that. But Clyde's is a full-line Browning dealer, so people like to buy guns year-round. Clyde Sports Shop has all the Browning models you need, and they have, you know, all you got to do is ask. If you're looking for a particular X-bolt in a particular caliber, just ask the question, because there's a backstock there that may not be out on the shelf. If it's something that Browning has stopped making, well, Clyde's probably has a couple of them in the back room somewhere. So why not stop by 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, Halethorpe, just off Beltway Exit 9. That's Clyde's Sports Shop. That's their website, Clyde's Sports Shop. Clyde's is open 7 days a week. The phone number there is 410-242-6108. For rods and reels and fishing tackle and licenses and crabbing supplies, terminal tackle, live bait, and minnows, it's Clyde's Sports Shop. You'll be glad you did. We'll be right back.
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up to Laney Valley Road. Now, Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, Fisher's popcorn, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Madonna Seafood Restaurant is a full-service casual dining restaurant with all-you-can-eat crabs in a quiet atmosphere with an extensive menu. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs. 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. Madonna Seafood is open at 11 a.m. and closed Mondays. 410-557-CRAB, 2722. MadonnaSeafood.com.
Hey, Spurrier's Tire Service, located at the corner of Dover and Elliott Roads, just off Route 50 here in Easton. That's where the locals get their tires and their auto service work done. They feature American-made Bridgestone and Firestone tires, as well as any other brand for any other truck or car. Spurrier's Tire Service has the tires for your car or truck, any make, any model. Doesn't matter if it's a tractor trailer or a Triumph, they've got them. Spurrier's Tire Service has any tire for any machine in your backyard to your barnyard, garden tractors to farm tractors, all the farm machinery. And if you own a trailer or an ATV, Spurrier's has the tires. Spurrier's offers tire repair, full-service automotive repair. They'll check, diagnose, and repair your vehicle when that dreaded check engine light or any other light on your dashboard comes on. Their 24-hour truck service and more has kept Spurrier's customers, including Robin and me, satisfied for well over 30 years. Stop by with no appointment needed for tires. What? No appointment needed for tires, or call Spurrier's Tire Service in Easton, 410-822-7384. That means if they have them, they'll put them on while you wait. Visit the website, SpurriesTire.com, 410-822-7384 for Spurries Tire Service.
Alan Ellis here for MilSpec Spray-On Truck Liners. MilSpec Spray-On Truck Bedliners provide unmatched protection for your vehicle with the toughest bedliners on the market. And MilSpec liners support veterans and military families. Whether you're a hunter, crabber, angler, contractor, farmer, waterman, or weekend warrior, your MilSpec liner with a nationwide lifetime warranty protects your truck bed from scrapes and impacts no matter what your gear. Tree stands, tackle boxes, crab pots, any kind of tools. Have your MilSpec liner installed at Superior Linings and Truck Accessories, located off Ritchie Highway at 81 Dover Road in Glen Burnie. Call Bobby Hawkins at 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. And Maryland Spray Linings is just off Security Boulevard, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Call Jack Carver. That number's 410-455-0800. 455-0800. These MilSpec liner dealers can install any truck accessories, tonneau covers, step bars, toolboxes, truck hitches, and more. Schedule your appointment today to get your MilSpec liner installed.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. Battery Warehouse, convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County. And now, back to the Outdoorsman Radio Show with Alan and Robin Ellis.
I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't stomp them out and you can't make them run, cause when them old boys raise on the shotgun, we say grace and we say man, and you ain't into that, but don't give a damn. We're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you, Hank. You tell us what we're all about. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and that's two very important things for outdoorsmen here in Maryland. You forgot about breasting out a goose. So, good morning. Well, Mike Luisi here from Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fishing and Boating Service. We're talking about striped bass right now, and we may or may not get into blue catfish, blue crabs, and singing the blues, but we'll keep trying here. Mike, we have two callers on the line. Lee is first. Lee is not only a recreational angler, but a commercial fisherman. And the new state record yellow perch was caught on his boat a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
How about that? Morning, Lee.
Good morning, all. Good morning. Alan, thank you for letting me participate in the group here. But
sure.
Yeah. I'm hearing, what do you all think of the accuracy of the Young of the Year Index? Is the accuracy there? Because I'm still seeing within the commercial fishery and my friends that we mostly all do hook and line, but we're all able to fill our quotas, and we're seeing plenty of fish. And it seems like from the year class that they're of concern.
Well, so I'll just say, and thanks for the question, and congratulations, by the way, on the yellow perch. That's fantastic. our juvenile index survey has been ongoing for 70 plus years, and it is extremely accurate when it comes to predicting what even the recreational catch shows. So commercial harvest is a little different, and you know, you have a quota and you can catch those fish throughout the year. And most times, no matter what the quota is, the commercial industry gets very close to that quota. Recreationally, what we see is that when the stocks are low, we have less harvest and less interactions with striped bass. And so if we take our JI survey, our juvenile index survey, and we look at that over time, it follows very nicely. So when we have low years of recruitment, when those fish get large enough to become interactive with the recreational fishery on the coast, or either in the bay or on the coast, we see those same exact trends throughout. And so the thing that people are missing in some cases when it comes to our juvenile index survey, we're catching fish between 1 inch and 2 inches long that were just hatched that spring. So those fish, nobody sees them. You're not going to be able to look in the water and say we're going to have a good juvenile recruitment year class this year. You'll see them as they grow up and become older fish in the bay, and that population strength will dictate what our management is to maintain sustainability. Now, the thing that a lot of people don't understand either is that we are not the only state that does a juvenile index survey. So Virginia does a survey. There are, I believe, New Jersey and New York do a survey. And all of our surveys, all of the surveys are tracking the same way in most cases. So what would be a red flag for us is if we said we saw nothing, yet Virginia or New Jersey said we had these amazing year classes in our systems this year, but we didn't see anything. We would question that. We would wonder why we didn't have the same similar result as those other states, and we're just not seeing it. So I am very confident in our ability to predict year class strength based on our JI. It's not about abundance. It's not trying to count the number of fish. It's just trying to explain to the scientists and to the public how successful spawning was. So spawning occurs no matter if it's successful or not. Fish come to the rivers, they release eggs, they're fertilized, they hatch, and then that's the critical period. That's the critical period of time for those first few months that those fish need to be able to figure out how to survive. And the environmental conditions and all the things that Alan just brought up earlier were all part of that. But it's not, we're not counting how many young fish there are. We're just trying to get an indication of the success rate of spawning. And I'm very confident in the work our survey team does and in the survey itself.
One other topic Alan mentioned earlier is myself and my family and friends, we do catch and release, but we do mostly in the dead of the winter, in the December, January, February, when it's extremely cold, and there's really not a whole lot of people that participate in it. And
right.
And I sent Alan a picture, you know.
Oh, yeah. Fish,
and it was truly a trophy-sized fish, but 9 out of 10 of the fish we catch, we don't even bring out of the water. You know, it's a quick picture. I can assure you it's a quick picture. And it's all done in the wintertime when there's the least amount of stress.
That's correct.
Fish. I didn't even know we had this tremendous fishery until basically my kids discovered it, and at least for this old man. And it's quite a fishery, and it's a very
It's an exciting time when you're able to catch a 40-inch, 50-inch striper, isn't it, Lee?
Absolutely.
Very exciting.
What I'm saying is these fish aren't anywhere near, you know, I hear through social media a lot of griping about, you know, they're dropping their eggs. You know, this is the dead of the winter. I don't even think they've developed their eggs even fully. Now, I totally get it with when it gets into the, you know, March and April. For catch and release is probably and you all have a cutoff time for
Lee,
when it comes to an end.
Let Mike address the viability or the growth of the eggs in a female striped bass the time of year you're fishing on them. Mike, are the eggs? I'm sure they have an egg sac, and I'm sure the eggs are developing. But at what point are those eggs developed in February?
Well, they're developed to some ratio between being started and being complete.
Right.
And once they're complete, they let them go.
They let them go. Sure.
So, and this fish don't spawn until the water temperatures get to a particular point.
And the photo period.
And the photo period. So you've got a combination of water temperature and photo period. So all of that early season, December, January, February. What we've seen in the recent change is that fish seem to be coming here to the bay in that time of year, just do what we call staging for spawning. So they're finding food and, you know, trying to stay out of trouble a little bit until the photo period and the water temperatures get right. But it's very
They meet Lee and his family. They're in trouble.
Yeah, if they meet Lee, yeah, they're going to be in trouble. But their eggs are developing that entire time, and then once they're ripe and ready to go, they don't wait around. They release those eggs and get immediately back out to the ocean.
Got it. Uh-huh. Very good, Lee. I hope that answered your question, and appreciate the call.
One other quickie, I learned from my commercial fishermen. They took between December and January before the Susquehanna, 186,000 pounds of blue catfish out of the Susquehanna River. So I thought I'd throw that out there to the
blue catfish are a major concern for us.
I would say the major concern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're having a detrimental impact. I'm a true believer in the fact that our juvenile recruitment of things, not just striped bass, but other species,
everything,
are suffering as a result of having so many predators in the areas where these fish are being hatched.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
Well, thanks, Alan. Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate you weighing in on that.
Lee.
Yeah, man.
Having me on.
Yes, sir. Let's talk to Tim. Tim, you have a question for Mike.
Yeah, actually, I thank you for Lee let me participate.
Sure.
I've got two, and I'll make them quick. Has the department had any kind of thinking about adding some places where they do the young year survey, like in the areas where the populations or fish are being caught, like the Patapsco for years I've fished it, and I've always run into the schools of like 6 and 7 inch fish while I'm perch fishing, and it's not just a one-time thing. Would, you know, looking around there, and with that being said, a lot the last 2 or 3 years, the population of stripers have been caught in the Patapsco. Maybe looking around to do surveys in these areas instead of just the historic areas, to where, you know, there is a saying, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. Just expand on that a little bit.
Of course. Yeah, and so for your listeners as well, Alan, there is a...
Yeah.
There's a pending legislation during this year's General Assembly that is taking into consideration adding some, you know, some sites to the JI. I think the simplest way to address the issue, and I used this in my testimony the other night. if we decided that, okay, there are adult fish in the Patapsco River during the summer, okay, that's great. That, like I mentioned before, there must be food, there's decent water quality, and they're there for a reason.
Right.
If we were to go into the Patapsco River and look for fish that just recently hatched from the previous spring, it would be the same as us going to the grocery store and looking in the canned food section for a carton of eggs. They're just not going to be there. Those river systems do not have any of the properties that bring fish to them to spawn. There's no flow. There's very little flow, I should say, which is a major contributor to what the striped bass needs to in order to have a successful spawn. So if you think about the rivers that we're sampling, we've got the Patuxent, I'm sorry, the Potomac River.
Right.
The Patuxent River, the Upper Bay, where we have those inputs coming from all the different river systems, and then the Nanticoke. You know, those systems are more complete. And so while, and I think what we intend to do moving forward is we want to start exploring some of these other places just in case we're missing something, but we don't believe we are. I don't think if you went and drug a stain net up around the Baltimore Harbor, there's very little to zero probability that you're going to find viable, young, 1.5-inch striped bass in any number, which it's where the fish go is they go there for a reason. So they swim to the upper Potomac for a particular reason. There's something there that that brings them there. The Patax, the Severn River, the Magothy, the Miles River, the Chester, the Patapsco, the places on the map where folks are asking us to try to find fish, they're just not going to have fish. Now, and they might from time to time, but in my opinion, Alan, and if we do ever find large numbers of young fish in those other river systems, it probably means that the entire bay had an explosion of young, successful spawning.
Okay.
And that they are just more of the overflow from all
just,
of that.
Just briefly, how many sites are tested for the...
I think we have 22.
22 sites?
Okay. 22 sites.
Okay. Yeah. Tim, I hope that answered your question.
It does, and my final one real quick is for the summertime, and we have these massive schools in off Bloody Point in the Patapsco, and you're seeing the release mortality. Are circle hooks really working when you have the massive amounts of fishermen going after them and chumming the water so hard to get these fish so riled up that the they're just sucking in the bait and not even getting the hook into position to be hooked?
A circle hook is only as good as it's the use of it in the practice that it doesn't gut hook a fish.
Right. I mean,
if fish are still being gut hooked, then the circle hook didn't do its job.
Right. Or
it tells us though that circle hooks cause less mortality overall if you use them than if you don't.
Or the angler allowed that fish to take the bait for too long.
That's correct.
I mean,
chumming is one of those practices where it's a little more difficult because you're not, especially if you've got the rod and the holder and it's just kind of, and it's, you know, you're letting the fish kind of chew on the bait a little longer. And that can also,
hurt. A lot of, in my experiences watching the fishery, I don't see a lot of rods and rod holders, but what I'm getting at is maybe, in the heat of summer, maybe go after, I'm not saying ban it, but encourage more of the jigging style of fish to where you don't necessarily have that fish having the opportunity to suck in the bait because it's a moving target.
Right, right.
It's, yeah. All right.
Yeah, we try to stay away from, we try to stay away from managing kind of terminal tackle. I mean, we have in the past, we've mandated circle hooks in some cases. But, yeah, I mean, one of the things that we could talk about down the road in the future, depending on how the stock swings, you know, maybe we take away the chumming. Maybe you're not allowed to chum at some point in time.
Yep.
Right now, that's not something we're talking about, but it's, you know, anything's open for discussion.
Yeah. I know that's going to hurt a lot of feelings, but if it does save the population a little bit, you know, we should...
Of course.
Look at it. But my thought about the circle hooks is, even when the angler is holding the rod, when you have such a competition for food within that large school of fish, and you're just pumping them with a total flow of chum when you've got a fleet of like 30 boats sitting over less than a quarter acre, square acre, that sort of charges those fish up, and they're just sucking the food in.
Yeah,
right.
Tim, we got to let you go. We appreciate the call and the points that you made, and you know, we're here every week, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me have a couple of questions.
You got it, man. No problem at all. All right. We've got to take a break, and we've got to come back. We'll come back to Dale in Easton. But
is that Dale Weinrich?
That is Dale Weinrich, for sure.
I was hoping to hear from him. I was hoping to get a question from Dale.
Indeed. All right. Clyde Sports Shop, let's go fish and sail. We're getting you all pumped up for that. Let's go. 10 days coming up, March 14th through the 23rd. Savings throughout the store on all the rods and reels and a lot of tackle. Don't forget the Ugly Stick weightlifting contest that you can enter to win. And check out the St. Croix rod selection while you're there as well. Live and frozen bait, minnows, licenses, lures, hooks, terminal tackle, and anything you need for any kind of fishing, for perch, trout, panfish, bass, circle hooks for rockfish, bucktails, umbrellas, and parachutes. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne/Halethorpe in Baltimore. 21227, that's where you'll find Clyde Sports Shop. That's also the website, ClydeSportsShop.com. The phone number there, 410-242-6108. Clyde's has been around since 1957. Open 7 days a week. Stop by for crabbing, fishing, hunting supplies, guns, ammo, licenses, and much, much, much more. You'll be glad you did. Our friends at Backyard Billy's, well, the furniture sales are starting to look up as the weather starts to turn towards spring. They've got everything imaginable, every type of table, all the chairs for your backyard, your deck, wherever you like to recreate at your home. They've got it all. They've got the chicken coops. They've got the dog kennels. They've got the storage sheds and greenhouses. They've got pergolas, and they've got gazebos, and they've got storage sheds that you can, you know, free delivery and installation for the first up into 60 miles, and free delivery to the beaches as well. Backyard Billy's is just that, all about your backyard. They do carry the stoves and inserts. They also carry the, you know, those famous Adirondack chair, and you know, furniture for your deck and for your beach house and all that stuff. It is an amazing place. You need to stop by backyardbillys.com. Hearth America Facebook page. Phone number is 410-827-4500. They're open today and tomorrow. They're open 7 days a week. And again, phone number 410-827-4500. Route 50, exit 44B, Evans Avenue, Graysonville. If it's heat you want, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is the fireplace, and Backyard Billy's is all about making your backyard great again. We'll be right back.
Hey, if you know a lot about guns or not much and want to learn, Bel Air Gun Range provides a place to shoot, practice, and learn in a family-friendly environment. And you can make your selection from the showroom when you're ready to own a firearm. At Bel Air Gun Range, the public indoor gun range is open 7 days a week with no membership fee required. Rental firearms are on hand. Bel Air Gun Range memberships are available to individuals, couples, and families on an annual basis. Bel Air Gun Range stocks handguns, rifles, and shotguns for shooting sports, competition, hunting, and home protection. Ammunition, too. Bel Air Gun Range buys, consigns, sells, and transfers new and used firearms. Bel Air Gun Range offers personal firearms classes with an NRA-certified instructor. HQL handgun qualification license courses can be taken in a group or virtually from the convenience of your home. For more details about Bel Air Gun Range services, sales, and classes, stop by 2137 North Fountain Green Road in Bel Air, Maryland, or visit the website belairgunrange.com. Call 410-399-9518. That's 399-9518. Be safe, shoot, and have fun at Bel Air Gun Range.
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up to Laney Valley Road. Now, Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, Fisher's popcorn, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Madonna Seafood Restaurant is a full-service casual dining restaurant with all-you-can-eat crabs in a quiet atmosphere with an extensive menu. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs. 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. Madonna Seafood is open at 11 a.m. and closed Mondays. 410-557-CRAB, 2722, MadonnaSeafood.com. Alan Ellis here for MilSpec Spray-On Truck Liners. MilSpec Spray-On Truck Bed Liners provide unmatched protection for your vehicle with the toughest bed liners on the market, and MilSpec liners support veterans and military families. Whether you're a hunter, a crabber, an angler, a contractor, a farmer, waterman, a weekend warrior, your MilSpec liner with a nationwide lifetime warranty protects your truck bed from scrapes and impacts no matter what your gear. Tree stands, tackle box, crab pots, any kind of tools. Have your MilSpec liner installed at Maryland Spray Linings. That's just off Security Boulevard, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Call Jack Carver at 410-455-0800. That's 455-0800. Superior Linings and Truck Accessories, located off Ritchie Highway at 81 Dover Road in Glen Burnie. Call Bobby Hawkins at 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. These MilSpec liner dealers can install any truck accessories, tonneau covers, step bars, toolboxes, truck hitches, and more. Schedule your appointment to have your truck protected with a MilSpec liner today.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County. And now, back to the Outdoorsman Radio Show with Alan and Robin Ellis.
Okay, we're back with trumpets, that's for sure. Let's talk to Dale in Easton. Good morning, Uncle Dale.
Good morning, Alan. Mike, excellent job.
Hey, good morning, Dale.
Explained things extremely well. I think our decision, 25 years ago, was certainly the correct one.
Yeah, thank you.
Mike, I'm kind of curious. I'm going to approach this from a little different angle. I think a lot of the people in Maryland don't realize the complexities of management of this species. It's having observed some of those ASMFC meetings, it's people don't realize the intricacies of the management decisions we have to make. You just can't sit back and decide, well, we're going to have a two-fish limit and these seasons are this long, because you're dealing with all states up and down the Atlantic seaboard,
right,
and some of which are not very friendly to us. So if you could elaborate on some of those decisions that some of those factors that come into the decisions that you all have to make regarding seasons and little bag limits and size limits.
Yeah, I'd be happy to expand a little bit on that. Different from how we manage some of our other species in Chesapeake Bay, ASMFC's role in striped bass management is really where it all happens. At the Atlantic States Commission, any changes that we would be considering need to be supported by a majority of the states from Maine to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have the ability just to manage stripers in Maryland. That is something that we're not allowed to do based on the agreements that we have with ASMFC. We have to do it as a joint body, and any changes that are being considered, again, need to be approved by the board. Now, the thing where the complexity comes into play is that since the moratorium, as this population has grown to where it is now, and the interest in striped bass has rejuvenated itself after the moratorium, there are different interests by different states based on their stakeholders. So Maryland is more of a catch-and-keep type fishery because we have smaller fish. It has just become the practice that charter boats and private anglers are out there. They are catch-and-release fishing as well, but a lot of fish are being harvested.
Right.
That differs tremendously from what we see in Massachusetts, Rhode Island. There's still harvest there, but those fishermen are much more interested in a catch and release type fishery, and they want to experience a trophy fishery every single year. So the reason why they're hard on us is because we have the fish first, and our actions, the management that we implement in Maryland, will either save or catch too many of the fish that they will ultimately have off their shores. And so there's a struggle between the states to be able to achieve what the stakeholders in those states want, but also work together cordially and professionally to consider each and every, to consider all of the interests and all of the individual people's expectations of management.
I'm sure all those meetings are indeed cordial and professional.
At the table, they are as professional as they get, but at dinner in the evening and at the bar at night, they can often get a little wild.
Alan, based on my observations, it was a combination of let's make a deal with Monty Hall and a wailing of gnashing of teeth.
You got it. Yep. All right. Well, Dale, thank you for that. I appreciate you bringing that up. And we'll see if we have time for Jim. It's going to be tight. Good morning, Jim. How are you? I think Jim had to leave us. So, well, at this point, we'll just say, Mike, thank you very much. We didn't get to the blue crab stock assessment. We didn't talk much about blue catfish other than the fact that they are a huge threat to all of our fish in the bay. And we hope that we can get you back another time to maybe address some of these other issues. Yeah, that'd be great.
Reach out in a few months, and we'll know more about blue crabs and stuff in a few months. We'll have a better picture of what's coming this year. And just reach out. I'd be happy to get back on with you guys.
Very good. I appreciate all your effort. I know you're not feeling good. Time for you to go take some DayQuil and head back to bed. So we appreciate your time this morning. I don't blame you.
All right, Alan, thanks.
All right, Mike, thank you very much indeed. There he goes, folks. Mike Luisi, thank you for all your calls. Sorry we didn't get to Jim. Sorry we didn't address everybody's calls and concerns and emails. But we packed a heck of a lot into that last hour, and we want to thank Mike, our guest, for that. Mike Luisi with Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Fish and Boating Services, or whatever they call themselves now. Anyway, folks, there's the music. That means we got to get out of here for the week. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same station, 5 to 7 every Saturday. Podcasts are available at ellisoutdoors.com and on the WCBM.com website. Aaron does a great job of recording these shows and sending them up to our buddy Bulldog, or down, I guess, or south to our Bulldog in Florida that puts them on the website. So get out, stay safe, hug your family, love your Lord. And have a good week. See you next time.